Tonight I want us to talk about Jesus being a man
of compassion. And one of the things that kind of sparked this thought is a video that was sent to me by a good brother. And one of the things that was said in the video, it was a doctor who was standing before or sitting before a Senate, and he was indicting himself and the doctors concerning COVID-19. And he said that, if I could paraphrase it, we didn't demonstrate compassion like we needed to. Is that what you got out of it, Brother Royce? We didn't demonstrate compassion. And the more I thought about that, I thought about how Jesus was a man of compassion. And so before we actually get into the idea of compassion and what it is and how Jesus displayed it, I want us to notice a few Old Testament passages. Ryan, if you don't mind, get me Zechariah chapter 7, verse 8 and 9, or 8 through 10. Dustin, get me Micah 6, verse 8. And Stephen, get me Job 6, verse 14. Zechariah 7, verse 8 through 10. Micah 6, verse 8. And Job 6, verse 14. Zechariah 7, verse 8 through 10.
It says, the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, execute true judgment, and show mercy and compassion every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart.
Amen. Micah 6, verse 8.
He has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.
And finally, Job 6, verse 14.
He who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty.
Now, you've noticed those passages, very succinct, very clear, and all of them demonstrate the compassion of God. But the one in Job is very interesting, that when you forsake compassion, you actually forsake the fear of the Lord, the fear of the Almighty. And it caused me to think about Jesus and Jesus being a man of compassion. If you're taking notes, I want to give you some things that you can write down before we actually get into the meat of the lesson. Number one, compassion is used in the King James Version 20 times, 20 times. And when I say compassion in the and 20 times, we're talking about in the New Testament. 19 times in the New King James Version, 12 times in the NIV, and 16 times in the Christian Standard Bible. I couldn't find it in the ESV. I don't have that app. However, I found it interesting that compassion is used so many times. And for the most part, they're used concerning Jesus. But there are different words as it relates to compassion. 12 times is used from the Greek word splachizomai, which means to have the bowels to yearn, to have the bowels to yearn. The bowels were thought to be the seat of love and pity. Love and pity. I want you to be considering these definitions because there are plenty of definitions that I want us to consider. Also, to feel sympathy, to feel sympathy, to pity, inward affection, inward affection, to be moved, tender mercy. So when you consider this particular definition or Greek word, again, the definitions, the bowels were thought to be the seat of love and pity, to feel sympathy, to pity, inward affection, to be moved, tender mercy. The verses that have this particular word in it, Matthew 9, verse 36, 14, verse 14. All of these are in Matthew. 15, verse 32. And 20, verse 34. Now, you have some duplicates, and I'm not going to give you those. But then you have others. Mark chapter 1, verse 41. Luke chapter 7, verse 30, verse 13. And Luke chapter 10, verse 33. Mark 1, 41. Luke 7, verse 13. Luke 10, verse 33. I found it interesting that the root word is only used one time in the New Testament, just one time. Look at Luke chapter 1, verse 78. In Luke chapter 1, verse 78, if you read all of Luke chapter 1, it's very interesting concerning the prophecy of Zacharias. And I believe Zacharias is dealing with who? Anyone remember? The prophecy of Zacharias? Wasn't that John the Immerser? However, when we talk about the child, talking about the Christ, to give knowledge of salvation to his people by the remission of sins, verse 78, through the, here's our word, tender mercy of our God, with which the dayspring, that's the Messiah, from on high has visited us. The idea of dayspring, you can find the correlate in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19. It's a good cross-reference right there. And so this is for that particular word, splachisomai, dealing with the bowels, all right? There's another word that's used by the Apostle Paul that I thought was interesting, and we'll get back to Jesus, but there are different words concerning compassion and pity in the New Testament. Paul uses this word in Romans chapter 9 and verse number 15, and is relating to God exercising pity on whomsoever he will. On whomsoever he will. Look at Romans 9 verse 15. In Romans 9 verse 15, you go and you read the rest of the context, and you'll be blessed by it. But here, Romans 9, verse number 15, for he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whomever I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whomever I will have compassion. The word for compassion there is oiktiro, is O-I-K-T-I-R-O. That's a very important word because it's also used in Exodus chapter 33 and verse number 19. Okay? When you break this compound Greek word down, it's very powerful. It literally means, oh, pity. O-H-P-I-T-Y. Oh, pity. That's the way I took it. Sir?
Where you say pity?
Pitied? Yeah, P-I-T-I-E-D?
No. P-I-T-Y.
P-I-T-Y? Exactly. And so when you think of it, when you think of this word being broken down, literally meaning, oh, pity. So God here is having pity on whomsoever he desires to have pity on. That's an interesting thought. Look at Hebrews 5:2. We see a different word being used in the New Testament concerning compassion, concerning tender mercies, concerning pity. It is in Hebrews chapter 5, verse number 2, concerning the human high priest. The human high priest, coming from the Greek word metario patheo. Now, when you consider it's metrio, which literally means a little, patheo, p-a-t-h-e-o, a feeling which the mind suffers. A feeling which the mind suffers. So notice this particular word, and I'll give you some definitions once I read the verse. Very, very touching. Very touching. In Hebrews 5 and verse number 2, talking about the human high priest, he can have compassion, there's our word, on those who are ignorant and going astray, See, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Now, notice some definitions for this particular word. It means to be affected moderately or in due measure. To preserve moderation in the passions, especially grief or anger. Of one who is not excessively disturbed, now notice this, by the errors, faults, or sins of others, but bears with them gently. Now think about that. Make no mistake about it that Jesus fits this bill. That he can see someone in a situation that is actually going to do them harm, yet doesn't get so overly excited about their situation that he doesn't think it through himself. Sometimes we can see people in sin and it burns us up so much that we can't even help them. Not the human high priest. The human high priest has to keep himself at a logical level that he can help everybody. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't it true that we get bent out of shape when we see certain people doing certain things? Yeah, we do. But shouldn't we always keep our logical mindset? Yes, we should. Because there's one thing to get the emotions all high and getting all bent out of shape or so low, so and to the point you're bent out of shape. But it's when you come back to an even level of thinking, you start to think things through. So the human high priest fits this bill. We also see this particular word in Hebrews chapter 4, verse number 15, sympatheo. Sim, S-Y-M, patheo, the idea of the same passion, the same feeling, the same emotion. Hebrews 4 and verse number 15. Notice what it says about Jesus. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, what? Without sin. Yet he understands exactly what we're going through. And we see that in Hebrews 10, verse 34. Peter would use this particular word, sympatheo, or sympatheis, same idea. Look at 1 Peter 3 and verse number 8. Now, keep in mind that when you think of Peter, as we discussed this morning, and I believe that Peter demonstrated to us how to really live our lives according to the will of his Savior and our Savior Jesus Christ. Peter uses this word as an adjective, not necessarily as a verb, which is interesting. The idea of this particular word in 1 Peter 3 and verse number 8, finally, all of you be of one mind, having, notice, compassion, sympatheo or sympatheis, for one another. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted. Be courteous. So forth and so on. Now, this particular word literally means having compassion on one another. Having a fellow feeling. A fellow feeling. Suffering or feeling the like with another. Sympathetic. But look at Jude. Jude 22 is a very interesting word. Very interesting word. It's after talking about building yourselves up in the most holy faith. Keep yourself in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But then he uses a different word. He uses the word eleo. E-L-E-E-O. And it means to have mercy upon, to help one afflicted, or seeking aid, helping the afflicted to bring help to the wretched to experience mercy. Now that's interesting right there, because one thing that Jesus did a lot of, and this particular word is referred to Jesus as well in so many different ways. He helped the afflicted. He helped the one that was seeking aid. And it caused me to think, are children of God living their lives in a way that people can approach them to seek the aid? Yes, sir.
I sympathize with those who are suffering and stuff like that, but it adds to that the idea of the desire, a strong desire, to help them with their problem.
Yes.
Compassion involves not just, well, I'm sure sorry you're suffering like this and walking away from it, but how can I help
you? How can I help you?
Is there a way I can do something for you?
Now, look at Job 22 with that being said, Brother Royce. On some have, here's our word. Here's our word. Helping the afflicted, to bring help to the wretched, to help one afflicted or seeking aid. On some have compassion, making a distinction. But others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garments defiled by the flesh, defiled by sin. This particular word is used concerning Jesus. Look in Mark chapter 5 and verse number 19. In Mark chapter 5 and verse number 19, there was a demon-possessed man, and he had a lot of issues. A lot of issues. What are some of the issues that this man had? Somebody give me one of the issues he had. Who remembers? All right. All right. He was cutting himself. All right. What else? Say again? They couldn't chain him. Out of control. Say again? Come on, Miss Mary. Don't do me like that. Anybody else? Anyone? What was this man doing? Where was he living? In the cemetery among dead people. There's a lot going on in this man's head. A lot going on. And so in Mark chapter 5, look at verse number 19. Matter of fact, 18 and 19. And when he got into the boat, he who had been demon possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had what? There's our word right there. There's our word. This man here was looking for help, looking for aid. Jesus helped this man. And it's very interesting. If you look up in verse number, look at verse number 15. Verse 15 of Mark chapter 5. Nate, what does that say? Mark 5, verse 15.
And they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion.
Watch this.
Sitting and clothed and in his right mind.
He was sitting, he was clothed, and he was what?
In his right mind.
Jesus took care of this man. Now, if we consider, what does it mean to have compassion in this context? Of course, Jesus went about doing good to settle this man down, put some clothes on this man, put him in his right frame of thinking. What does it mean to have compassion on people? Well, you know, sometimes it takes the same thing, right? Settling people down, putting some clothes on their back, helping them to think reasonably and logically. Nothing mystical or miraculous today. Just takes a little time. Takes the word of God. Takes some patience. Takes some love. I want to give you a point, but it's too early right now. I gotta wait for that point. But you see, Jesus was able to do that. Look at Luke 17. In Luke 17, in verse number 13, we find something very powerful again. You have the 10 lepers. These individuals wanted compassion and mercy from Jesus. Luke 17 and verse number 13. They lifted up their voice and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And notice how Jesus extended mercy. Notice how he extended compassion. So when he saw them, he said to them, go show yourself to the priest. And so it was that as they went, they were cleansed. What did Jesus, or how did Jesus show them compassion? What did he tell them to do? Go show yourself to the priest. And as they were going to show themselves to the priest, they saw that they were what? That they were cleansed. The main point I want to get with that particular text is that Jesus demonstrated compassion because they came asking. They came asking. Look at Matthew 9, verse number 36. And Brother Hedick, give me Mark 6, verse 34. Matthew 9, 36. Brother Hedick, give me Mark 6, verse 34. Because I was asking myself a question. When you're studying, you need to ask yourself questions. Try not to get caught up in the trap either of looking at just one context or one account. That's the word I'm looking for. Look at multiple accounts so you can get the whole picture. In Matthew chapter 9, in verse number 35 and 36, we'll throw in 35, Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitude, he was moved with what? He saw the multitudes. He was moved with compassion. There's our word there dealing with spagzizomai. I guess that's how you say it, dealing with the bowels. But notice the rest of it. Because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. So I asked myself this question. How did Jesus show compassion to these people? Well, Mark's account gives us the answer. Look at Mark 6, verse 34. Now, listen closely and look closely and be critical in your thinking, because showing compassion doesn't necessarily mean that you're coming out of your pocket all the time. Showing compassion means this. Go ahead and read it, brother.
And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things.
How did Jesus show them compassion? Say again? He started teaching them. Sometimes people are in positions because of ignorance. Sometimes people are in positions that harm them because of ignorance. Well, that's one thing to be ignorant. There's another thing to be stupid. Right? Yes? Anybody paying attention? Yes, right? You know, to have the information and do nothing with it, that's something wrong with that. But when you don't have the information, well, these people were like sheep without a shepherd. No one to guide them, to navigate them, to caress them, to hold them, to comfort them, to give them the things that they needed. So he began to teach them. Yes, ma'am. Speak up, Evie, so we can hear.
This is one of the things that I feel very convicted on, because I come across many students in the education system that are not taught. They're not taught by their parents. They're not taught by society in a lot of ways, and their actions are a reflection of that. And in some ways, I do feel for them. However, I'm more angered by them than I am have compassion, because it's frustrating when you're trying to share information with them that's contrary to what they're accustomed to hearing and seeing and doing.
That's right.
So it is very difficult to transition from that understanding that these are people that have not been taught, and that is the majority of the reason why they conduct themselves in the way that they do,
right,
and to have compassion to then begin finding a way to teach them.
That's right. There's so many ways to instruct people, but you have to be able to identify it. Let me show you a contrast. Look at Matthew 14. And for whatever reason this situation takes place, it takes place. For whatever reason. But the situation actually took place. In Matthew 14, verses 14 through 21, this is the feeding of the 5,000. Don't really want to get, want to read all of this, but verse 14, and when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them. And he healed their sick. When it was evening, verse 15, the disciples came to him saying, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is already late. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said to them, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." Notice the contrast. Here you have one, Jesus, who's full of compassion, moved with compassion, and he says they're hungry. Well, if they leave, they're going to faint along the way. The disciples, Brother Ryan, say they need to leave and go get them something to eat. Jesus, he contrasts them and says, "No, you feed them." He's challenging them. I was thinking about that, and I said, how easy is it for people to send other people away? Well, Brother Stephen, they got the government. They can go to those programs. Well, what about the church? What do we do? Well, we could send them downtown. Well, what if I have it in my hand to give it? Well, I don't know what they're going to do with it. You see the contrast between Jesus and even his own disciples? Send them away. Jesus said, "No, you feed them." He's challenging them. Well, I guess we can defend the disciples a little bit and say, well, how are they going to feed them? Well, if anything, Jesus is teaching his disciples, you find a way. You find a way to take care of them. Why? Because this is how the compassion of the Lord is going to be displayed through you. Through you. I found it very interesting, the contrast between the two. Any comments, any questions on that? He had to make them think, yes. Anyone else?
It is easy for us to be products of our environment, products of our society. Our society has established other means for people to be fed or taken care of. And like you said, you know, they can go to the government, they can go to the food bank, they can go other places. So our mindset isn't even, you know, doesn't first go to, let me go to my refrigerator. You know, let me go to my freezer.
Stop it.
To provide something to them, it automatically goes to let me direct them away to go get it from somewhere else. And it is a mind changing type of thing. It is countercultural for many of us at this juncture to think like that.
Amazon has a commercial, and I'm not gonna lie to you. When I first saw it, made me upset. Now when I see it, it just makes me sick to my stomach. And the commercial is, we fed over 21 million people or something like that, and we've helped. And it just caused me to think. I'm like, here's Amazon. Number one, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. Number two, you don't have to go out there and be telling everybody what you're doing. Number three, really, who's supposed to be doing that? Is it Amazon or should it be the church? Mike, are you putting all that pressure on the church? Well, I'm not saying they can't help. But where is the church? We make money too. And truth be told, our money ain't really for us only. It's to help our who? Our neighbor. So I see Amazon and they doing these things. And I told Evelyn, I said, I find that commercial pretty interesting, and the reason why is because here they're putting it out there that they're helping people, so in their time of need, guess what they're going to do? Come back to Amazon. Amazon's not the church, just like Mark Zuckerberg is not the head of the church. He's head of Facebook. What's that, Bezos? Is that his name? John, what's his first name? Jeff Bezos. Same thing, Jeff John, same thing. but here's the point. Look what they're doing, and look how they're advertising that. And so you get that in people's head enough, next thing you know, you find, well, look what Amazon is doing. Amazon is there, where's church? And they're delivering it right to their front door. That's interesting. Just causing me to think. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but that's fine. Say again, I'm not overthinking it. One preacher said, I got money, I just ain't got it for that.
I think sometimes too, Amazon's platform is so much bigger because they're a business or whatever. And so like we as the members of the church are more of a word of mouth per se than the big picture Amazon.
That's an excellent point. Also keep in mind Amazon didn't start as big as they are right now. So anyway, just something for us to think about. Only thing we have to do is do our part. We're not in competition with Amazon, because truth be told, Amazon will never be in competition with the church. Never. However, the sons of darkness are more shrewd than the sons of light. And so we got to be thinking about demonstrating our compassion and also looking for opportunities. Look at Matthew 18, 22 through 27. Sometimes compassion is demonstrated through the releasing and forgiveness of a debt. This is a familiar narrative for us. In verse 22, Jesus said to him, this is after the question that Peter raised, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. And the master of that servant was what? Moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt. Now, if we think about this, it's interesting that releasing and forgiveness is equal to pity. Drop down to verse 33. Remember what this servant did, and it went back to the king, what took place. And so he was brought before the king, and he said, should you not have had compassion on your fellow servant just as I had pity on you? Friends, I think about the world that we live in and what that doctor on that video says. Very interesting video. And for him to indict himself and the medical field was powerful. He didn't say they were the problem. He said, we're the problem. That's what he said. We're the problem. And he indicted himself. He put himself under the microscope of being wrong. And then it caused me to think, why? And you know what he said? He called one doctor out by saying, you didn't have a treatment for COVID-19. You sent them home. But did you at least call them to check on them? And the doctor said, no, Brother Royce, right? He said, no. And he said, doesn't sound like you care. Because if you cared, you would have called them at least to see how they were doing instead of being at home growing sicker and sicker. Next thing you know, they're in the hospital. Next thing you know, they're dead. Here's the point. He called them out for not having compassion. Compassion. And if anybody ought to be filled with compassion, it ought to be the child of God. because we have had compassion. And Jesus demonstrates this. Now, I want to show you something. This is a very touching one right here. Look at Luke chapter 7. In Luke chapter 7, very touching. And I don't know why Jesus responded the way that he did. I could speculate. But Luke chapter 7, verses 11 through 17, we're in the city of a place called Nain. Verse number 11, many of the disciples were with him. A large crowd was there as well. Verse 12, he came near the gate of the city. Behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother. And she was a widow. Maybe that's why he had compassion on her. You know, the only family she had was this son. Now he's dead. She doesn't have a husband, doesn't have a son. And the Bible tells us in verse number 13, when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, what? Don't cry. I could just see how Jesus would say that. He I'm pretty sure he didn't use the Mike Bonner tactic. You know, man up, you know. I'm working on that, you know. Working on that. Be like, you know, you just man up a little bit. He said, don't cry. Don't weep. But then notice what he says in verse 14. Then he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still and said, young man, I say to you, get up. So he who was dead sat up, began to speak, and he presented him to his mother. I want to show you something that I observed. Number one, in verse 13, Jesus saw her. Number two, verse 13, he spoke encouraging words to her. Don't cry. Number three, verse 14, he touched the open coffin. Number four, verse 14, he told the man, get up. And in verse number 15, the ultimate, he presented the son to the mother. I mean, that was a beautiful day for this woman. Don't cry. Just moved. Could it be that we watch so much television? I'm just throwing this out there. I'm not talking about us. That when you see blood and guts on television, and I mean, it just don't mean anything. You can become desensitized to things to the point that you don't even have compassion. I mean, it happens. I'm not condemning us. I'm just saying these are things that happen. And so that's a very touching story right there. It's always been touching to me, but for him to see her and want to do something about her state, he could have easily allowed that man's processional to just keep going. But he didn't. He did something about it to prove a point. Yes, sir.
He saw her pain.
Yes.
He saw her suffering. He didn't look at her and say, God, I'm going to help her.
That's right.
He really saw her.
That goes with the definitions that we've been going through earlier, how we started in the introduction. Let me show you some consistencies. We just saw one right there. But in most of these, you'll see some consistencies. One of them that's very consistent, he saw. And so what questions do you think went through my mind as I'm kind of thinking about this? What question would go through your mind? He saw. Ma'am?
What did he see?
All right, what did he see? What else? Do I see the same way? What else? Am I paying attention? I mean, I mean, can I be on the go so much that I'm not even paying attention to people? Sometimes they're in our own house. Yes, ma'am. Excellent point. There are people that are in certain situations, if you're just listening, you can see what they're dealing with. You may not have all of the details, but you can just see. You can have an idea. And one older brother said, his name was Abraham Davis. He was an old man when I obeyed the gospel. You remember him, Nate? And he's old, man. Goodness, he was old. He was older than you, Royce. but he said if you ever get to a point where you're so concerned about yourself, go look to help somebody else. That made so much sense, because being a young convert, full of myself, because that's what young converts are. They're full of themselves until they learn to mortify and die off. And then they are more like Christ. You get to see where people are and like, okay, how can I help this situation? How can I better their life? How can I teach them the gospel? How can I be patient? See where they are so I can help them out of the situation and take your time getting them out of it. But not if we're so focused on what we're trying to accomplish. And sometimes, could it be that we in America are in the state that we're in as a nation because we've gotten so caught up in making money that we forgot one another? Yes.
Backing off of that thought, it was just striking me through previous conversations that we had that in our society, it's almost fundamentally direct opposition to the life of the Christian, because we're a very individual-based society. We're very individually invested. So we care very much about our rights. We care very much about our money. We care very much about how much the government is going to be giving us in our stimulus checks. We're very interested in what kind of health benefits we can receive because of the length. You know, there's just very many, there's so many things that we pay particular attention to that will initially benefit us, and then we'll see someone on the street, a homeless person on the median, and the like, and we'll think, I mean, they can go to a shelter, they have so many different resources available to them. And it just struck me that no wonder we're struggling so much, because our American self is constantly in opposition with our Christian self, and it's a tug of war within ourselves. We're supposed to be a community-based society, the churches. We're community-based, we're supposed to be community-oriented.
Yeah.
And it struck me when you were saying that, it just struck me that individually, I'm not surprised that so many people struggle with coming up with ideas on how to help people or even perceiving that someone needs people.
That's good. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. That made me think of kind of the effect when there's a big group of people and one person's in trouble or needs help, where everyone else is like, oh, this other person's going to take care of it. Oh, no, this person will take care of it. And no one takes care of it.
Mm.
And that's the problem, because we need to be able to take it on ourselves, be able to go take care of it, and not try to think someone else is going to do it. We need to be able to stand up.
I would liken that unto Evelyn and then Stephen. I would liken that unto, and hopefully none of us will ever see anything like this, someone getting beaten up and people are sitting there videotaping it. No, Mike Bonner's stopping it. I'm tackling somebody. I'm not sitting there videotaping it. The dude's getting his brains beat out. Why are we doing that? Lack of what, Royce? Compassion. And then it goes viral on Instagram or viral on Facebook or wherever. And we're sitting there, where have we gone? No, we cannot have that thought process. Yes, ma'am.
It reminds me of talking about wisdom, and one of the definitions that we went to was being astute. And the definition of being astute was to be able to accurately assess situations or people and then use that to your advantage. In the sense of saying, okay, there's something going on right here. I need to get involved. I need to do something because you are accurately paying attention to the situation or to the person.
That's right.
And sometimes we just have people that are not astute. They're not even aware. And I've said this before about young kids or, you know, teenagers. If you're not talking directly to them, if you did not say their name and specifically have them to look you in your face, they are not paying attention to anything that you just said or did. They feel like it wasn't addressed to them, it wasn't including them, it had nothing to do with them, therefore they didn't need to pay attention to what is going on. And if they're doing that with just their own circumstances, just, you know, in a classroom, let's say, what are they doing in life as they go out? It has nothing to do with anybody around them or anyone. It has everything to do with just their immediate self. And I'm sorry, I want to piggyback too on what Catherine said, because what she said was very important. If we don't start to realize that the things that Christ is teaching us is countercultural, it is getting increasingly more the case to where Christian principles and things that you stand on are being rejected strongly by the world as being wrong, as being, you know, and they're labeling it with all these negative labels of being evil and all these kind of things. But if we do not take a stand on those Christian principles, then we're no better than the teenagers who are not astute.
That's right.
We're no better than them because we are desiring to blend in to our political climate or to our civil society instead of actually being Christ-like and willing to take a hit for the team, if you will, or willing to suffer for the cause of Christ. And that's really what it's going to take.
That's a good point. Stephen?
CPR training, they teach you not to say someone call 911, they tell you to point out a specific person and say you could call 911. So instead of saying generally, you point someone very specifically.
Right. Good point. Yes. Yikes.
That's why it goes viral on like social media platforms. And that's what I've literally seen in Grand National community about it. I shouldn't have, but I've seen a situation where there's a fight happening and the fight gets broken up and people are like, who has the video? Did you catch that? And they're like running and trying to see it. And I think that's kind of the thing, like, it's not only that they're not doing anything, it's that they're enjoying it.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Excellent point. Because not only is it not beneficial, not right to have compassion, but to go the other way with it. Yeah. Yeah. So the further, and it's interesting, the more that I think about, the further we're getting away from God, from the Bible, it's manifesting itself in different ways. And it's easy to look at the big picture instead of the details of how we're getting away. And this is one of the details of compassion. And if we're not careful, we can have that attitude as well, even amongst one another. And the Bible demonstrates to us as people of God to have compassion on one another. So you see someone going through something, what can I do to help them, to aid them, to make their life better? Why? Because at one time someone helped me and made my life better. And so that's why it's nothing to help brethren out. Why? Because at one time, someone helped me out. Real quick, Matthew 9:36. These are passages we've already looked at. Matthew 14, verse 14. The consistencies we see, Luke 7, is that Jesus saw. He saw, which implies he was paying attention, looking for opportunities to do good. And so as he went about doing good, he was looking for opportunities to do good. But Mark 1:41 and Mark 6, verse number 34, he was moved. Consistent, he was moved. Something stirred his intestines, his inner self. Something stirred him that he couldn't sit still, but he had to move to help the situation along. Brother Royce, you want to make a comment? Okay. And so the more I thought about that interview, that video, or whatever you want to call it, the more I was thinking about our Lord was very compassionate. Friends, you'll never go wrong being compassionate. And some people may look at you as being soft. They may look at you as being easy. That's fine. Who cares? What we ought to care about is, do I look like Christ? Do I think like Christ? Well, you don't know what they might do with the money that you give them. Who cares? We're wise enough, hopefully we are, to assess the situation enough to say, okay, I feel good enough to help this person out. I'm not giving people things and objects and money and places to live just so they can cheat us. We're not doing that. I don't think we would do that. But you can't go to the other end where you find the man that was beaten up and left for dead and it was a Samaritan that helped him and not the priest and the Levite. I would venture to say that the priest and the Levite probably had the attitude, if I help him, what's going to happen to me? But we can't have that attitude. And so compassion really should move us to actually do what is right. Yes, sir.
There is a song, Footprints of Jesus.
It's a good song, too. Appreciate that, brother. Anyone else? Yes, sir, Brother Eric.
Well, sometimes people block you from showing your compassion. On my job, there was a guy coughing, and, you know, I know he's on dialysis, you know, he looked like he needed some water. I had one. I was fixing to give it to him. But my boss told me not to because he don't know what he's going to do.
He's going to drink it.
But it was just me thinking about him because he was over there. You know, and y'all helped me when I'm coughing. Y'all gave me a bottle of water. And, you know, but just like what you said, when people help me, they want to help us.
That's right. That's right. James? All right, I thought you had your hand up. Anyone else? Yes, and then yes.
I was just going to say, Jesus had the right to say he did not because he did something.
Mm.
There's a passage, and I can't think of anything right now, but there's a passage where basically Christians are being called out for saying, you know, be ye full, and then they do nothing. Or like, don't James worry too. About this, and they do nothing. So you can only have the right to consult someone or tell them everything's going to be okay if you're going to put in the effort to make things okay again.
That's a great point. Excellent point. Yes.
If you expect that nothing, if you expect everyone's going to just do something bad with something you're going to do with something, if, like helping someone, like if someone's homeless on the side of the road and you give them money to help them, give them food, and like you're not, and you just expect the worst, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to, you're going to lose your compassion.
That's right.
If you just constantly think the worst of people, you're going to lose all compassion.
That's right. Yes.
I think the other side of that compassion, Jesus has the authority to say, we can't, we should do something. But in the case of when a brother or sister has lost their child,
yes, and I've learned in situations like that, sometimes the best thing to do is to say nothing. Just be there. Just be there. Some of the best advice, sometimes people, when they don't know what to say, they just talk. It's not good. Don't do that. Not in that type of situation, what you just brought up. Just be there. Just be there. Yes.
thought about the difference in just paying for who's behind you in Starbucks?
Oh, yeah.
And then the way you judge people that you're helping that don't have needs. You're basically judging them. Like, why are they in that spot? What if they took my money? They really didn't need it. Well, it's not your money. And
that's right.
You know, you could change their life by doing that, and it's...
There's that's right. But it's nothing like driving up to the drive-thru and someone says, well, the car in front of you paid for your coffee. Like, well, I won today, boy. Free Starbucks? Like, well, you can't beat that. All right, let me close it down. I'm done. Any final thoughts?